Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 296. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, have you also had Tommy John surgery?
No, but it's on the horizon if I try to throw, because it seems like anybody that's throwing is now having TJ, and it's just not great for the fantasy outlook. It's made me rethink everything that I'm doing with pitching for fantasy purposes. It's just wild, man. It's a crazy last week of injury news, and sadly, I fear that more's on the way.
Unfortunately, I mean, we're only April 7th right now, and we've already had several major pitching injuries. You know, some of those are Tommy John, others are different, but yeah, it's not looking good in the pitching landscape, which was already, you know, filled with landmines as it was, but now I feel like there's just more landmines than open space in the pitching landscape these days. But yeah, we're gonna break down a lot of pitching today. Certain players, strategy, how we're dealing with all this. It's gonna be a pretty fun episode. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our prospect, dynasty, FYPD rankings, daily write-ups, so much more. And obviously, you got to check out all the great stuff going on over at RotoBaller. So much top-notch content pumping out every single day and great tools as well, podcasts, you name it, RotoBaller's got it. Use the code TOOLSHED, get you 10% off any premium package over at RotoBaller.com. But Chris, before we get into specific player discussion today, you mentioned how, you know, we kind of have to rethink everything we're doing with pitching. And I think in dynasty leagues, obviously, we've always kind of preached more of a hitter kind of heavy approach, especially early on in the initial drafts and whatnot, and with your core especially. But do we need to go even more hitter heavy now, even more to that end of the spectrum? I'm almost starting to wonder, you know, people that play fantasy football will understand this, like, do we need to start treating pitchers almost like running backs where the shelf life, like, I mean, when they're great, they're awesome, right? And then they'll have those handful of years where they're just like phenomenal. But the shelf life just seems to be so short on these guys that it's hard to really invest heavily in them, you know, whether it be guys that are already up or even, you know, some of the top prospects right now in the minor league. So kind of where's your head at right now with all these pitching injuries, Chris?
Yeah, so I think especially like in a dynasty format, which is mostly what we're here to talk about, just thinking about the landscape of how we treat pitching. And it's tough because when I look at this landscape, I've always been lower on pitchers than most. And in general, I rank pitching prospects lower than most as well, just because of this risk. But now the risk is really heightened more than ever, in my opinion. Like, we've seen just how quickly these guys are going down. And it used to be the saying, well, they had Tommy John once, they're good. But, you know, now we're seeing that's doesn't really matter because Strider's on his second. There's been plenty of guys that are on number two that are on number three. We've had players have three Tommy John surgeries. It's a really tough, like, landscape of what to do with them because you have to have pitchers to win. But at the end of the day, I think that with so many people dealing with injuries, and all your league mates are dealing with it too, that ultimately it allows you some flexibility where if you pound bats early in drafts, you will be able to you have an advantage. There's arms that pop up every year. Yeah, I think that you kind of look at it and say, okay, there's a lot of guys that throw hard that are injured. I mean, just look at the list this year of like the top fastball velocities. And yeah, I don't really know like if this is the case or not, but I think the pitch clock has affected it. But like Eno Saris just wrote something up and put out a graph, and it's so the top velocities. Bobby Miller, Hunter Green, this is fastball velocity. Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, G-Rod, Spencer Strider, Otani, McClanahan, Jesus Lizardo, and Garrett Cole. I guess this is from last year. And six of those guys have gone down. Bobby Miller, Hunter Green, Grayson Rodriguez, and Jesus Lizardo are still standing. So, you know, I think that there's been a lot of discourse on what is it? We've seen doctors come out and give their pieces. We've seen plenty of people give their thoughts on what's causing it, whether it be the pitch clock, whether it be the velocity increase. You know, and we can argue all day long, but at the end of the day, here's what I know. There are a lot more injuries, and there's a lot more emphasis on velocity and stuff. In bullpens, you have pitchers that are trying to top personal best every play because they're wired up. There's four screens around them. They're seeing every little piece of data, and it's nobody's fault, but it's human nature to want to be better. These are professional athletes. They have lived on being better every single day. And so whether a team is telling them to be better or not, naturally, I see that number. I'm trying to beat it every time I'm throwing. It's just human nature. So with that, I think that that's the negative side of the data revolution. So ultimately, it's tough. But from a strategy standpoint, you still need arms to win. But am I looking more towards pitchability arms? It's a good question because we've seen plenty of guys that have stayed healthy, like a Chris Bassett. And while he's not the flashiest, like he's not going to get you a ton of strikeouts, he stayed healthy. And, you know, he's old. He's still on the mound, but he's throwing innings. There's a lot of guys like this that, you know, the lower velocity guys have, you know, worked out and been a little better. So maybe long-term we see the focus swing back to more of a pitchability, less focus on velocity, especially with all the discourse out there at this point. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I don't know. I mean, it's a tough question to answer with what we're looking at, but I'm curious to know your thoughts on how you're handling it. Because in general, I'm just fading pitchers more. I'm pounding bats early, and I'm taking guys that have known durability. And it's easy to sit here and say that because Garrett Cole was one of the most durable arms there was until he wasn't. But and even Shane Bieber, who we're going to talk about, like he's not a heavy fastball, like high velo guy. So, but he's been hurt for a while. So that's a side point. But at the end of the day, go check out Eno's article. It's really good. There's a lot of good research out there. I am not a doctor. I'm not all that smart, but I do think that there's certainly correlation effect.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discourse, as you mentioned, on like why this is happening. And it's not one thing. I think it's a lot of different things. And so you're not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. Most of the people that are talking about this aren't doctors. So we don't know. But yeah, definitely, handful of contributing factors, and absolutely max effort is one of them. Because I just remember back to like when I was growing up, first getting into the game, there weren't a lot of guys that were throwing this hard back then. There were some. You had your Randy Johnsons, your Nolan Ryans, your Pedros, you know, but those guys were like top of the scale back then. And most of the other fireballers were, yeah, there were some in the bullpen, but you know, there are more starters like Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine than like Randy Johnson back when I was growing up. And now it's like, you know, you see very few guys that are throwing low 90s and, you know, focused on painting the corners and pitch movement and mixing pitches. Now it's like, all right, let's just blow everybody away and rely on movement and velocity to get outs. And obviously that stuff's important. I'm not saying it's not, but it's the fact that everyone's trying to go, you know, full effort. And it's like, oh, this guy's up 2 miles an hour. Great. I mean, is that even like, yeah, it might sound great initially, but is it great for that pitcher long-term? And we've seen that nobody is safe. Like you mentioned, like all the guys, some of these guys that we considered very safe arms, like, you know, rewind 12 months, Gerrit Cole, you know, one of the safest arms in baseball, Sandy Alcantara, one of the safest arms in baseball. Even these guys that we, you know, consider to be very safe, high floor, whatever terminology you want to use, are going down right now. And that's why I'm like, you know, Zach Wheeler, he seems as safe as he can be, but, you know, is he a ticking time bomb? Like someone kind of put that notion out there, you know, initially, you know, a few weeks ago, and I kind of scoffed at it at first, but the more I thought about it, I'm like, man, you know, maybe they are. And Wheeler's not a guy that's throwing like, you know, 100 all the time, but he still throws pretty hard. But, you know, is he a ticking time bomb? Is others like him a ticking time bomb? And some of these young guys, you know, look at some of the top prospects, you know, Skeens, Job, whoever. Are these guys ticking time bombs at some point? So, yeah, it's really made me rethink, you know, even going less pitcher heavy, you know. And I love Skeens. I love Job. I love Tiedemann, Horton, etc. But is it worth it to invest that high of prospect capital into these guys that are just so risky? Or would you rather invest in, you know, someone that's similar in ranking like a, you know, a Matt Shaw or an Adiel Amador or a Walker Jenkins or a Sammy Basayo, guys like that, that are, you know, less risky as hitters that don't have that wear and tear on their arms. So yeah, I'm wondering if it's more, you know, better long-term to just not invest as heavily in pitching and even go more hitter heavy, especially with, you know, with top end prospects as well. So yeah, it's getting really tough to navigate all these injuries. And, you know, we already had a ton as it was. And then kind of over the last week or two, you got Bieber and Yuri Perez that are going to have Tommy John, and Strider. I mean, they haven't said Tommy John yet, but you know, how often does UCL damage, which is what they're saying right now, like when does that not lead to Tommy John? So it sucks. I did have some Strider shares, not really any Bieber shares, one Yuri share in Dynasty. So yeah, definitely getting hit hard. And we've already had, you know, a ton more McClanahan, you know, Kyle Bradish, obviously isn't Tommy John, Senga, but so many pitching injuries right now, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I had that tweet, 4 or 5 days ago at this point, of just all the pitchers that are on the IL. And I even forgot some guys like, you know, Lance McCullers and all of them that have just been out for so long that I forgot about them. But yeah, it's getting extremely tough. I had another tweet that I saw. I forget who posted it, but it was really funny. It was like someone said something along the lines of, "Can we just play in hitting only fantasy leagues at this point?" Like, make things a lot easier. But yeah, you know, how many shares of these guys, you know, Strider, Bieber, Yuri, did you have, Chris?
I did not have a ton of Strider, but I actually had a lot of Bieber. He was somebody that I thought the value was super good on this year.
Yeah.
And in Dynasty, like, I kind of had him and just weathered it, like, through the, I won't say even bad last year, but it wasn't great. But Strider I have in one redraft league right now, so I'm happy with that. But with Bieber, let's see how many I had him in. Actually, I'm surprised I don't have any Bieber on NFBC, which is interesting. I swore I got a lot more Bieber, but I know I have Bieber in about 3 Dynasty leagues, so that's pretty killer. Yuri didn't have a lot of either, and I think this brings up kind of the question at point, like, some of these guys, like we'll say Jiří, for instance, like, you know, he was a prospect not too long ago. So when I'm looking at Jiří Pérez type in Dynasty, like, what does that normally look like for me? And like, am I going and paying up for a pitching prospect? And I think that's a good discussion point to kind of segue. Like, here's my thing. I roster about 80% hitters to pitchers in my farm system because of this. And honestly, this makes me just want to roster even less. And I just think that there's such the risk. It's like, okay, where is the fine line? And do you buy high? So let's say the current, like, do you buy high on Paul Skeens or Jackson Jobe? I'd say absolutely not. Like, do you buy Jiří Pérez when he was at peak prospect status? I mean, yeah, it looked pretty good to do so and get that return because he was looking like one of the best pitchers in baseball. But now, you know, look at the result. So in general, like, I'm just not rostering a ton of pitching prospects, and I'm picking up the pop-up guys because every year there's guys popping up. Jiří was a nobody at one point. I mean, it just is what it is. Jiří was not a top prospect, and he became one. So that's when you get them. I don't think you buy high on them. You pick them up, you churn them, you trade them, and if they turn to Jiří, then that's pretty sweet. But yeah, my shares of Strider, luckily not too high because I don't buy starting pitching that high in Dynasty. I do have him in a couple leagues where I picked him up early, a couple dynasties, and just kind of held on to him. Bieber having a couple dynasties. Jiří I may have in one spot, but not too bad with this storm. But that's not to say that I don't have dynasty teams that are absolutely beaten up by other pitching injuries that just absolutely obliterated me.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I'm looking at one of my, like, the Highlander Dynasty League right now. I currently am looking at my hitter to the pitching prospect split. In this one, I have three pitching prospects and nine hitters, but one pitching prospect I kind of have to hold on to just because of all the, you know, designations and whatnot. So really only I have two pitching prospects in this one that I really want to hold on to, Jackson Jobe and Rhett Lauder, but that's it. All my other prospects are all on the hitting side. And yeah, I think I'm going to start even swinging, even like you said, harder to the hitting side because this is not really going well. Even like, you know, I think for the most part, I've been recommending like a 70-30 split for the most part, you know, over the last handful of years of us doing this podcast and being an analyst and whatnot. And that's just simply too low these days. And I'm wondering, like you said, is 80-20 even a high enough split? So yeah, it's getting really difficult. And at this point with Cole hurt and, you know, maybe he is back in a month or two, maybe it turns into something longer. Strider's looking like he's out until 2025 at some point. Jiří's out until 2025 at some point. At this point, I can't tell you with any level of confidence, like, all right, this guy is the number one dynasty pitcher right now. I mean, maybe it's still Cole. Maybe you still have Strider there because of how kind of far ahead of everyone else he was before the injury. You know, maybe you're going Grayson Rodriguez at this point or even Skubal or someone else, you know, in that range. But there's really no quote-unquote number one dynasty guy right now that I can sit here and tell you with any level of certainty that this is the guy. I mean, like, Chris, who would you put as number one? Just for a little bit of fun before we move on here. Like, right now, you know, you had to put out dynasty rankings right this second. Who would be your number one dynasty pitcher right now?
Oh, man. I think that's a really tough question. And, you know, I've thought about this. And it's like, okay, Strider was my number one. Cole was at the top two. Now I think that probably I'm putting George Kirby. I mean, I'm not like overly confident in that, but he looks like the type of arm that can stay healthy. I look at the other guys that are like highly ranked and I don't trust a lot of them. Like, they're big fastball guys. Like, I think that Luis Castillo certainly runs risk. I think that Tyler Glass now runs risk. Corbin Burns certainly runs risk. I think I'm just saying I'm going to take George Kirby because he's not that super elite, like, velocity guy. The command specialist gets the job done. I know. I mean, you can look, people are like, oh, he was bad to start the year. I don't care. Go watch the start. His defense was terrible. He shouldn't even allowed one run. But aside the point, I'll take Kirby just because I'm a little bit more trusting long term. Like, looking down the list, I don't trust a lot of the other guys, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't really trust anyone right now. And I guess, I mean, you could go to a Corbin Burns here. You know, I think I'm actually lean, and I love Kirby as well, so he's definitely in this discussion. I might lean towards one of the Baltimore guys right now, Corbin Burns or Grayson Rodriguez. But, I mean, honestly, Chris, I don't feel safe with any pitcher anymore. Even the guys that are, you know, deemed safe by most, you know, Kirby, you know, appears to be safe. Wheeler appears to be safe, etc. I don't know. I don't feel safe with any of these guys anymore. I mean, I've been a huge Grayson Rodriguez guy for a while, and he's looked really, really good start of the year. Burns has looked pretty solid as well. Kirby did get hit around his last start, but, you know, nothing to worry about there. He's still a phenomenal pitcher who I think is going to take a step forward this year, if anything. So, yeah, I guess I would go Burns now, G-Rod, and then maybe Kirby. But Strider's obviously still in this mix because, assuming he comes back, I mean, he's a little under 25 and a half right now. So let's just assume it's Tommy John, because I think that's where this is heading. So he's going to be back at what, around, you know, late 26, you know, age 26. So it'll still be before 27 when he comes back. So, you know, I guess you still got to have him in this discussion now. But, you know, does he become less risky of an investment moving forward, though? I guess the other thing is kind of fun to think about with these guys, or even like a McClanahan or any of these other guys that have already, they're kind of like rehabbing already and might be back, you know, whether it's later this year or, you know, to start next year. Do you feel more confident, especially if you're like a non-contending team, Chris, to go out and get a guy like, you know, let's just use Shane McClanahan as an example, a guy that's kind of already had, you know, surgery and is, you know, going to be back, you know, probably not later this year, but early next year. If you're not contending, would you feel better about trying to go out and acquire him right now or anybody like him?
Yeah, I think that now's the ideal time to try to do that. Just like looking at the arms that will be back next year. Like, let's just say your team's been kind of decimated by injuries to this point. Like, you've lost several of these guys. It's like, all right, I think this is the time to look to make a run on those injured arms that are coming back next year. Like, the McClanahan is kind of that perfect fit, in my opinion, that you look and say, okay, like, he's the type where I'm good going and getting him, knowing that he should be fine coming back next year. Shane Boz, I think, is a good target. Like, people have asked, like, Kyle Bradish, Kodai Senga. I don't feel great about those, personally. I don't know what to do with them, to be honest, but I don't think I'm going out and actively buying. They could come at a discount, so that's a possibility, too, that you could get a great deal, and they're fine. I know Bradish is throwing. He seems to be on track, but, yeah, I look at, like, a McClanahan, and I think that, you know, this is where you get the value at this point. Like, yeah, if you feel like your season's just washed, like, get Sandy Alcantara, get Shane McClanahan, get some prospects that are close, even though I don't love that. Get Andrew Painter. That's who I'd want to get. Is Painter completely out of sight, out of mind? And that's where he kind of becomes a good value, is that, okay, he has not pitched in a while and he won't pitch, so you can get him. Woodruff's a little more scary because his shoulder, and those shoulders tend to linger. But like a DeGrom type, maybe. I don't know. Springs. Those guys all could come pretty cheap and could give you a pretty decent return if you're playing for 2025, which might just be the play if you say, like, okay, I feel like right now I've lost so many arms that there's no way I compete. And I know you never want to throw in the towel on April the 7th, like we're a week in.
Right.
But there are circumstances where I think, okay, you were maybe already a slightly rebuilding team anyway. Maybe these are the kind of moves you look to make.
Yeah, and for the most part, you know, you never want to throw in the towel like you mentioned, but most people do have an idea of, you know, even entering the season, all right, am I going to be a contending team this year or not? And if you already were thinking that you were not in the season, you know, maybe you're, you know, 10th out of 12 or 14th out of 15, whatever. Yeah, I definitely would look to start trying to get some of these guys that are out now but back next year and trying to get them now while their price tag is pretty cheap, because I'd rather pay up for them now than pay up for them when they're back healthy, that's for sure. But moving over to some player discussion here, you know, with all these top arms going down, you know, there's some vacancies in the you know, the quote unquote ace fantasy ace club or whatever you want to call it, the top 10 pitchers, top 15 pitchers, and Cole Reagans is definitely looking like one that could take one of those, you know, open spots. Ever since he transitioned to the rotation full time when he went from Texas to Kansas City last year, he's at 84 innings, 2.46 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, 9.6% walk rate, and a 31.4% strikeout rate. This year in two starts, 12 and a third innings, allowed two runs, five walks, and 16 strikeouts, striking out 33.3% of batters, still having right around a 10% walk rate, which is kind of where he's always been. Would you feel comfortable? I mean, let's just look at the talent here, Chris, and not, you know, any potential injury risk with him. So we talked enough about that. Just on talent alone, would you feel comfortable, you know, with Reagans being your ace moving forward? Because personally, I think I am.
You know, I just fear injury with him too. I mean, he's had a long history of injuries, and you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff is there. The velocity is there, but does that scare me a little bit that his velocity is right up so much? I mean, maybe a little bit, but I will say that when he's on the mound, he's looked really, really good. But it's interesting. I mean, fastball velo 92 in 2022, now sits 96, 97, up to near triple digits. Like, I'm not going to say it's a concerning trend, but it's concerning in the sense that a lot of these guys have not stayed healthy. And so that's kind of my fear here, is that this could be one that maybe he falls apart again. And I hope not. But when he's on the mound, he certainly looks like somebody that you should be confident in. It's a really good pitch mix. You know, five pitches, four seam. I mean, we mentioned the velo on it. The changeup is pretty devastating. He has a 64% whiff rate on that changeup right now. And it was pretty high last year at 34.5%. That cutter's a good offering. The slider misses bats. The curveball misses bats. Like, it's a pretty good arsenal, in my opinion. And I think when he's on the mound, you can trust him. I just fear, when does it all come crashing down? I hope it doesn't, but you know, this is, could be the type that could be hurt again. So I hope not, but I do like Reagans a lot. And you know, is it, should you buy high? Probably not. I think his value at this point is way too high. But if you have him, then I think you should be really happy if you got in last year.
Yeah, yeah. This is not the time to buy Reagans. But you know, in general, I do feel comfortable just on a talent standpoint. I mean, yeah, the walk rate is a little high, but you know, it's kind of similar to where like Freddie Peralta has lived for the last, you know, forever, really. So you know, I'm not really overly concerned there. If it got up to like 12%+, maybe I'd be a little more concerned. But 10%, given the stuff he has, the bat missing ability that he's consistently shown, I'm fine with that. And you know, if he's giving me a K rate above 30%, you know, the ratios, you know, were solid last year as a starter. They've been obviously solid this year. And yeah, I'm thinking he's a top 10, 15 pitching talent for guys that are healthy right now. So I'd be fine if he was my ace, but yeah, let's hope he can stay healthy and some of these other guys as well. But keeping it right there in the American League Central, going over to the Cleveland Guardians here with Tanner Bibee, who's looked pretty good so far. I mean, his first outing was a little rough, but last outing, 5 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, 0 walks, and 9 strikeouts. Gave up a solo home run. Was really the only damage allowed that outing. But Gavin Williams is also on the IL there in Cleveland. Obviously, we already mentioned Shane Bibee. I'm trying to combine these two names. Shane Bieber out for the year with Tommy John. So Bibee's got, you know, him and Williams are going to take a, you know, be the front of that rotation here moving forward. And while, you know, Bibee might not have the elite upside here, I feel he's still super underrated. I know you've been very high on him, Chris, higher than most on Tanner Bibee. And he feels like one of those guys that can give you a lot of innings moving forward. You know, maybe won't have the super elite K rate, but a guy that's just going to be really solid across the board, pretty consistent, and obviously just hope he can stay healthy. But you know, coming off a very good rookie year, had an ERA under 3 last year, 2.98. you know, maybe with all these injuries, maybe he can sneak in and provide you top 25 pitcher value here moving forward.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. And I think that here's the biggest sticking point is the fastball. The fastball is just okay with Tanner Bibee. And the first start, he threw it 49% of the time, which is he threw it in the mid-40s last year, pretty high usage. But this start, his last start, when you mentioned he struck out 9, he dumped the fastball usage all the way down to 30.8%. He used the slider at 33% and the changeup at 30%. So using all three pitches pretty evenly, I think that's the recipe for success here. Now, the four seems fine. Like, it sits 94. It's just okay. I don't love the pitch shape on it, to be honest. I think that, you know, it can get hit around when he's not locating it well. Say that. But the rest of the pitches are really solid. I really like the profile on that slider, on that changeup. And so now we say, okay, can he use those consistently more? And I certainly hope that this pitch mix usage sticks, because Bibee gets whiffs with the slider, gets whiffs with the changeup. Last year, it was 32% on the slider and 38% on the changeup. This year so far, it's 42% on the slider and 39% on the changeup. I love that. He dumps in a curveball to lefties. I want this decreased four-seam usage to stick, and I think that Bibee's going to be in for a really solid year. I think you're right. I think he's going to give you innings. I think he's going to give you good ratios and potentially strikeouts if he's using those pitches like we want him to use them. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm rather intrigued by what Bibee brings to the table.
Yeah, he's down about 7.5% on that four-seamer and up 2% on the slider, but the big jump is with the changeup, about 9%, which is good. Changeup is probably the least strenuous pitch, you know, as opposed to, like, you know, four-seamers and sliders and curveballs. So, yeah, Bibee, I think, is underrated, and I was guilty of that as well. Again, he's not going to be a stud for you, but I think he could be a reliable SP3, you know, maybe a back-end 2, depending on your league depth. But, yeah, definitely a pretty solid arm for sure. Let's keep it right there in the American League Central for one more arm here and talk Brady Singer, who's having a nice little bounce-back year so far through two starts. Only allowed one run in 13 and a third combined innings. 0.53 whip along with that. 14 strikeouts, just 2 walks. Yeah, I got that, you know, during spring training, you know, was showing a slightly different pitch mix. You know, last year it was sinker slider 93.1% of the time, with changeup about 6%, and then the very occasional, you know, once every other start or so, sweeper and four seamer. You know, this year, sinker slider usage is down to a combined 77%. So still pretty high, but going with a four-seamer more often and still the sporadic changeup. So I guess the real big difference here is more four-seamers, less sinkers, and a little more sliders as well. 50% whiff rate so far on that slider. And he actually has a batting average against of under 120 on all three of those main offerings that he uses, the sinker, slider, and four-seamer. He's got an 80% ground ball rate so far this year, which is absolutely insane. So I don't know, like, where are you at on Singer right now, Chris? I mean, it's nice to see that he's made some adjustments here, and I think he is, you know, in store for a decent bounce back. I don't think he's as bad as we saw last year, where he had a 5.52 ERA. But I'm also not one that thinks that he's going to bounce back to 2022 levels either. Maybe there's like an in between here where he's like a, you know, high 3 ERA guy, and, you know, an above average K rate, but maybe like Jose Berrios level, but I can't really see him getting higher than that. But what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's interesting. I think that, you know, he's probably not as good as he was in 2022, and he's certainly not going to be as bad as he was in 2023. Singer is hopefully going to be one that does bounce back, because, you know, under the hood, everything looks good so far. He is generating more whiffs. And you mentioned the pitch mix usage, I think, is a big part of that. Throw your best pitch more often. The sinker is kind of meh. I mean, he had a 3.39 batting average against last year and 11% whiff rate. You know, he allowed some fly balls and allowed it to leave the yard, which you don't want with a sinker. Got hit really hard. So he's dropped the usage from 51 to 28%. The slider usage all the way up at 48%. He's throwing that four seam a little more. I think the pitch is fine. I like the four seam a little bit more than the sinker. And I'd like to see him use the changeup a little more too. But leading with the slider is a huge aspect for Singer. And even when he had his great 2022 season, he had a 3.23 ERA in 153 innings. He didn't really strike guys out, just 150 Ks, but a good ratio type arm. I do think there's potential for a little bit more strikeouts. Like maybe he's a 25% K guy. He's 24.2 in 2022, 18.9 last year. So I'll say if he can be like a 25 to 26% guy, then it's somebody to really like. I think Berríos is a good comp. I think that that's kind of the potential like output you may get for fantasy purposes, which I'd gladly take right now. In the landscape of starting pitchers going down, you need them. Brady Singer should be rostered a lot more places.
Yeah, definitely agree there. All right, let's head over to the AL West now. Got a trio of arms to talk about there, starting with Kyle Miller from the Oakland Athletics. I mean, Oakland is, you know, got plenty of opportunities here for guys like Miller to really step up. Obviously, the rotation isn't the greatest right now, and through eight innings so far, he's been really, really good. Has yet to allow, excuse me, he's allowed one earned run so far with eight strikeouts in eight innings, 28.6% K rate, 7.1% walk rate so far. And this after, you know, really subpar last couple of years. I mean, it wasn't like a ton of innings, 89 and a third total. But Miller had an 8.03 ERA in 2022 across three starts. And last year, 13 starts, eight relief appearances, 7.60 ERA. So, Chris, this is a guy whose value is basically, you know, as low as it could be. You're looking at him, you know, deeper Dynasty League guy, still only 26. So are you seeing some potential value to be had here for Dynasty purposes?
Maybe. I mean, because the opportunity's there. Like, he certainly is going to get opportunity in Oakland. Well, he has not made a start yet. It's like, okay, like this guy might potentially be something. You mentioned it was as bad as it gets in 2022 and 2023. Could it be a rebound? Possibly. I look at the arsenal and the forcing velo is actually down. Weird to see when, you know, you're looking at dropping from 93.5 to 92.6. I don't take that as a concerning thing right now because I do think the location's been better. I think that's been a big problem, but he's locating it up a lot better. He's throwing the slider really solid there. Dropped a tick and a half on it, but it's working. I mean, you look at the pitch movement and it's actually improved. I would say the shape has improved on a lot of these pitches. The changeup improved shape, the slider improved shape. Maybe this has intentional dip in velocity. And I'm not going to say that you should get Kyle Muller like everywhere. He's going to be so great for you. But as a deep league option, I'm pretty interested because he's increased his extension this year. I mean, added 3-4 inches of extension. That's pretty notable. And I think the stuff will play if he's locating it. So that'll be a big thing. But also opportunity is huge. And he's going to have some opportunity. He's still young. Yes, I think that Kyle Muller might be all right.
Yeah, all the hype was around Joe Boyle, but watch it be Kyle Muller that has the better year out of the two. Yeah, there's not a lot going on there in Oakland, but some deep league targets there for sure. Right, and speaking of a guy that has lower slider velocity this year, Reed Detmers looks really good through two starts so far. Just absolutely dominated my Red Sox yesterday at 12 Ks in six innings. So far has 19 strikeouts in 11 innings, has allowed two runs, 45.2% K rate to a 9.5% walk rate. And you know, I tweeted this out earlier today on Sunday. You know, the two things I've noticed with Reed Detmers are, first and foremost, the slider velocity is down about 3 miles an hour. Last year, it was 88.9 miles an hour. This year, 85.8. He's also throwing it less as well. He's gone more four-seamers so far. Four-seam usage has gone up from 43% to about 55%. Slider from 31 to 18. Curveball from 19 to 14. Change up from 5.5 to 11.5. So a bit of a pitch mix change as well. And also the four-seam usage has been the same. The velocity has been the same. he's going up in the zone more so far. He left it over to Hart a little bit too much last year. And that's why the four-seamer just wasn't a good offering for him last year. 291 batting average against, 505 slug this year. Small sample size for sure, and these aren't going to stick, but 067 batting average against and a 133 slug, and even getting a lot of whiffs on it as well. 47% whiff rate on that four-seamer so far. And again, obviously that's not going to stick, but you know, the fact that he's made a location change there, but if a pitch mix change overall, you know, the slower slider, slider's been doing pretty well so far. And that wasn't even a bad pitch for him last year, but just to see these changes being made from Detmers is pretty encouraging. Getting more ground balls so far this year too. So a lot of good things so far through two starts. And I'm not going to go bonkers here. I think he's still, you know, best case scenario, maybe a back end top 50 arm, but you know, definitely encouraged what I've seen from him so far.
Yeah, so Detmers is pretty interesting. You know, he has looked really good so far this year. In his two starts, he so far has thrown 11 innings, has a 1.64 ERA. You know, his last start, obviously, against Boston being his best, he had 12 strikeouts to one walk. You look at Detmers, and it's like, okay, like he's a guy that's always been intriguing. We've looked at it, and it's like, all right, maybe he's going to break out. Maybe he's going to break out. He's just 24 years old. He's still young. I don't see why the breakout couldn't happen this year, but I do want to see a little more. We're talking small-ish sample so far. The four-seam usage is interesting because he's using the four-seam more, which I don't necessarily love, but he's getting whiffs on it. He's locating it much better than he had in previous years. He's throwing the slider, actually kind of a different pitch than it was last year. The velo's taken a little bit of a dip on it, and it's completely changed shapes in a way where I think Savant's classification of it is pretty interesting. You know, he's throwing the sweeper too. And so I'm looking at this, and I am intrigued because it's like, okay, it's almost a different pitch in a way just based on velocity and movement profile, getting whiffs there. The curveball has obviously been a really good offering in the past, and it still is. The curveball gets massive or vertical drop and even a little bit of sweep to it as well. So I don't know. I look at Reed Detmer's arsenal, and I'm like, all right, maybe this is it. I think the biggest sticking point for Detmers is just his location. He's struggled with location in the past, and he's got it hit around. Can he succeed with the fastball enough? Because the fastball location was a big part of it. Can he succeed enough with the fastball to set up the rest of the arsenal? Because I do like the breaking balls a lot. I think both breaking balls are good pitches. And the changeup has potential as well. So I'm interested in what Detmers is doing. We will see.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, keeping it one more arm here in the AL West with Bryce Miller, who's first outing of the year, you know, four earned and five against my Red Sox, but last outing against the Milwaukee Brewers on Saturday, seven shutout innings, three hits, one walk, seven strikeouts. And he's a guy that, you know, had some hype coming into the year, absolutely, as he should. You know, pretty solid rookie, you know, rookie campaign last year. You're not quite as good as like Bybee, but still pretty solid all around. And the fact that he added a splitter this offseason, and we saw the video on that, that kind of got the hype train going with him, something that he did not throw last year. And he's a guy that's really revamped the arsenal as well. When you look at last year, four-seamer 58.5%, slider 19%, sweeper 8.5%, sinker 7.5%, changeup 5.5%, and the very occasional curveball. This year, four-seamer is down over 20% usage rate, not down to 36.7%. The splitter is his second most used offering so far, 23.7%. Sinker is up 10% to 17.8%. Slider is down about 5% from 19 to 14.2%. And sweeper still kind of around the same range, about 7.5%. But the splitter so far, on top of being the second most used offering for him, 125 batting average against, 125 slug, and a 52.2% whiff rate. And that was the thing. He didn't have that big whiff rate offering last year. He had some pitches that could miss bats for sure, mainly the slider. But you look at his strikeouts last year, 107 strikeouts on the four-seamer and slider and only 12 on other pitches. I mean, he threw six pitches last year and only had 12 strikeouts on those. He's really was relying on that four seamer. Now that he has another offering that he can miss bats with and get strikeouts with, 8 of his 13 so far on that splitter. I think that's huge for Bryce Miller, and it wouldn't surprise me, and this is not a knock against this other guy I'm about to say, but it wouldn't surprise me, Chris, if we fast forward to 6 months, and in our dynasty rankings, Bryce Miller is ranked ahead of Logan Gilbert. But what are your thoughts on Bryce Miller right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you look at the profile, and it's like, all right, I think there's some interesting things here to like, hoping that he can continue with this next step forward. The command has been really, really solid. That's been one of the biggest things so far, the decreased four-seam usage. And the four-seam's a really good pitch, but you know, Miller's just mixing things much better. Like, I think that he's much less predictable than going 60% fastball, 20% slider, now going 36% fastball. And I know this is a couple of starts, but throwing the splitter, throwing some sinkers, throwing some sliders, sweeper. So I think that the splitter obviously looks like his best pitch right now. He gets whiffs with a four-seamer too. All about the location, because when he's got hit around, he just leaves that four-seam over the middle. And it can get a little bit flat at times. Like, it gets a lot of ride, but it can seemingly be flat. And so that's when he gets hurt, when he leaves it over the middle. Just easily hit. Sweeper's really good pitch. Ton of horizontal, ton of vertical drop. The splitter, nasty vertical drop too. I don't know. I look at the arsenal and think that certainly Bryce Miller looks like he could continue to take that next step forward. He's 25 years old. He's got the command so far this year. Like, let's see if it sticks and he can continue to progress, because the whiffs have been there too.
All right. One more arm here before we run out the show. And this is an arm that is returning. Yay. It's like the opposite of everything else. Everyone's going away on the IL, and we have one guy coming back from the IL right now. And that, well, there's a few, but one that's pretty intriguing right now, that I'm really, you know, looking to get wherever I can in dynasty leagues, is Aaron Ashby for the Milwaukee Brewers. We haven't seen him since 2022, unfortunately, but you know, this is a guy that has a good blend of skills that we kind of look for here. You know, looking back to what he did in 2022, had a 26.5% strikeout rate and also a 57.4% ground ball rate. You know, sinker, slider, changeup, curveball primarily. You know, slider had a 41% whiff rate in 2022, 42% in 2021. Obviously, the sinker gets a lot of ground balls. And obviously, you know, there's plenty of risk. You know, this guy coming off major surgery, missed all of 2023. But given, you know, the skills that he has, the fact that his perceived value has dropped pretty low because of the injury and time miss, you know, the upside he has, I think he's a pretty solid target right now in dynasty leagues that you can get for a pretty reasonable cost right now, Chris.
I do too. His stock is low, low, low. And I think there's opportunity to get a pretty good return on investment here, because I think he's available in a lot of leagues. You just look at the profile, and it's, you know, I think there's upside to bet on. He's now going to be back in the majors. So I'm not going to be completely ruling out that Aaron Ashby can come up and look pretty good. Yeah, you know, I'm hoping for the best. The arsenal is a lot of fun. Big sinker, slider, change type profile with even a curveball mixed into. In the past, there's been a lot of whiffs on all pitch types. The sinkers induced weak contact. It's a pretty fun arsenal with Ashby. The biggest thing has always been the walks, and can he keep those in check? And I think that question is still to be determined, but we will see. But at the end of the day, I think that Ashby's somebody to pick up because he's available everywhere. He's just 25. There's intriguing stuff, and let's see where it goes.
Yeah, and hopefully he can, you know, kind of get back on track here and show a lot of those similar qualities that made him a very intriguing dynasty arm, you know, back a couple of years ago, because, yeah, the upside is pretty enticing. So, see, it's not all bad. We ended on a positive note here, and a few positive notes with some arms starting strong, but obviously this pitching landscape right now is even tougher to navigate than usual, and probably will continue to get tougher. Let's keep our fingers crossed that some of these other big names can just stay healthy this year for our teams. But that is going to wrap it up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms and obviously all the good stuff going on over at Rotoballer as well. And we'll be back with you again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.